football on off the ball.
I know we questioned the decision to give him a new contract pre-game, which still feels a little bit odd, but ultimately I think he deserves it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hurling on off the ball with Apple Green, making every journey a winning one.
Welcome back. So Willie Maher, the former Tip hurler, is the GAA's national head of hurling. He's been in the role since the start of last year. The development of hurling, always such a fascinating conversation to have, which we try and do repeatedly on this show. So I'm happy to say that Willie is here with us in studio. Willie, how are you keeping?
I'm absolutely great. Thanks a million for having me in.
It feels kind of like the first championship weekend or the first weekend of summer hurling. Maybe it's because the clocks have gone forward. I know it's very much a league final weekend, but it does kind of feel like the start of something important when you get to... What is it, the first weekend of April?
It is, and I think once the, well, obviously the hour going back last week, the bright evenings, the bright mornings, I think it's just, it is hurling season, it's GAA season, and yeah, there was an excitement around the place, and then particularly obviously with the 1A and 1B final this weekend, it's, yeah, with championship just around the corner as well. So yeah, there's a lot of excitement with the hurling and football people at the moment.
So at the Gaelic grounds, it's going to be Clare versus Dublin in the 1B final at 1:45 on Sunday, and then after that, 4:00. The big one, Limerick versus Cork. This is probably going to be the first opportunity for a lot of people to see the new rules in hurling that were passed at Congress. Not as dramatic as, say, the football ones last year, but a few important bits. I know people who've been watching club matches or finals and matches from other divisions in intercounty hurling over the course of last weekend will have seen these in action already. But what we've got basically are changes to the descent rule. You might just break this down for us, first of all, Willie, in terms of what people need to be keeping an eye out for, whether they're watching this game on television or at the Gaelic grounds this weekend.
Yeah, and even just to go back a bit further on it, we did a kind of a fairly extensive consultation process last year with stakeholders on the ground through hurling development roadshows chaired by Terry Riley. It came from the ground as regards that we want, I suppose, better respect for referees. We want a game that's, I suppose, more... just again, without the dissent, without the arguing, without the moaning, we saw it a lot on big days last year, particularly the Munster final. A lot of activity on the sideline. Look, just to tidy up our game and make, I suppose, bring that level of respect back to where it should be, in my opinion. So we got that from, again, the ground. It came. This is a bottom up situation as regards this feedback has come from people on the ground. The second piece then was we obviously brought it to Congress with the Hurling Development Committee, but also through Rules Advisory. It got 95.1% as regards backing from Congress. So this is, the association is putting their power behind having this rule to tidy up our game. I suppose the nuances of it would be any player dissent, and that's verbal, physical, towards the referee or an opponent is 30 metres straight away. So referee brings the ball up straight away. So I think that will tidy up a good piece of any kind of interaction or any negative interaction between officials on the sideline or on the field. So that's the first piece. The second piece then will be around on the sideline for managers, selectors, coaches, that any, again, altercation with referees, be it physical, verbal, threatening in any form, is a 21-yard free. So similar to, I suppose, the football situation, the ball is moved in front of the goal, invariably it's a point. So you're punished for any kind of negative interaction.
Okay. Why did this seem so important to you? It's pretty obvious that we want to stamp dissent out of the game and make the game just a less frustrating watch at times. But in terms of the bigger picture, what are you thinking? What is the outcome from this when these rules will hopefully sink their teeth into the spectacle and we get a better, less frustrating prospect?
Yeah, I think so. But again, I suppose we had a situation in Cork at one of those roadshows in Portcullis last year, and one of the referees kind of stood up and just said, look, I'm refereeing hurling, I'm refereeing football. Refereeing football is a lot easier than refereeing hurling now, as regards, from any kind of dissent piece, as regards, there's no decisions questioned in football anymore. So why can't we have this for hurling? And that was number one. Number two, as part of that, again, recruitment and retention of referees is so important. If we don't have referees, we don't have a game of hurling. And it's I think it's really important to have that. I had a phone call this morning from a friend of mine who's near retirement as regards from a club player. Number one, talking about the importance of, I suppose, teams embracing this and players driving this on the field. It's gone into their local club WhatsApp. These are the three or four key pieces, and we're going to, I suppose, use this as an advantage over other teams that are less disciplined. Also, at the end of the call, he says to me, I might go refereeing. Right. And I was kind of going, blew me away as regard, yeah, because the same individual, I had no idea he was even thinking that. But he said, if this were to translate into a cultural change within the game, this individual would go training. And look, that's only one example from one phone call this morning. So I think, I think it's really exciting as regards that, again, just get on with the game and let the officials, again, refereeing big matches is very difficult as well. Like, making split-second decisions under pressure from everybody, including players, is a really difficult ask. So I suppose this is giving referees more space to make better decisions at the most important times in our game, which again will lead to less frustration from sidelines or anywhere else.
Is the recruitment of referees a bit of an alarm bell at the moment for the association?
I suppose that does sit in games administration and. But it's probably always an issue as regards, yeah, that we need, again, and then developing the referees that we have to allow them to train them, to develop them, to make better decisions on the big day. Hurling is a really difficult game to referee, and we have to give them as much support as we can as an association together, that we're all kind of in this as hurling people to make our game better.
In terms of what you've seen then over the last year, this is an effective process of getting this motion through Congress, and we're going to see it in full flow over the course of this year and beyond. What are the other main takeaways from your first year in this role? Granted, that's a pretty broad question, but has anything surprised you? Has anything stuck out to you from your various trips around the country, in both the really, really strong counties within the country and those that are struggling to keep up?
I think it's, and you've kind of nailed it in the question as regards. Each area has a different ask. Each area is a different problem as regards that we're trying to find solutions for. So a blanket approach to everything will not work as regards in this instance. So you're talking about the emerging counties and the bottom ranking counties at the moment, where participation is relatively low in comparison to other sports, or particularly in Gaelic football terms. Like, that's a participation experience ask. How do we get more hurlies in kids' hands to allow them experience the game? Again, I've continually referenced, I worked in a previous role with a colleague from Kildare, and he'd never had kids' hands to allow them experience the game. Again, I've continually referenced, I worked in a previous role with a colleague from Kildare, and he'd never held a hurley before. Like, and that's stark as regards in
Lee McCarthy County.
Lee McCarthy now. Yeah. You know, so, like, and again, he's a gentleman, probably 45 or 6 years of age, but again, huge work having gone on there. Again, in that development Peace County as regards in the middle tier, it's a participation ask as well, but also trying to drive high performance standards to allow players to compete, and having, I suppose, managed leash, understanding the piece that is needed. How can we get more players playing the game and bringing them through by playing at a higher standard hurling? In the Lee McCarthy issue, in the counties, it's a separate ask as well. As regards, it's probably top end, and the problems there seem minuscule compared to the bottom ranking counties. But there is still issues there, and I suppose the elite coaching piece and creating better pathways through, more development opportunities for players, more games. Again, it's very important, and I was at a lunch a couple of weeks ago with the Clare GAA, and that was the message as regards to them. Just again, from chatting to individuals around the room, just don't forget the strong counties either, as regards that it's important that we keep driving forward with the fantastic quality of product we have and the amount of players we have here, but also again focusing on the non-traditional areas, which again is very much part of my remit.
Do you have a target in mind or a metric that you'll be able to use to gauge whether or not your tenure is a success? Like, you talk about getting hurleys into the hands of every kid or a vast majority of kids around Ireland. Is that something that you're targeting? Do you have numbers or a percentage of kids on that front?
Yeah, I think that has to be it, because like it's nice to say, oh, we'll get a hurley in every kid's hand, or that will, yeah, be the goal. How do you measure that? Because again, what's measured is done. Yes, is the answer to the question. We are working through, I suppose, establishing baseline data figures as regards where we are with certain areas. We have teams, we have games that go on per county, but really getting into that participation piece and understanding it more, number one. Number two, then building out plans that are robust to actually tackle. Again, equipment is a barrier to entry here. How do we provide equipment at a lesser cost or target into certain areas? But that has to be linked with coaching, which is a really big issue as regards as a barrier. Oh, I've never hurled before, so I can't coach. Couldn't be further from the truth as regards. This is a relatively simple game when broken down as regards and holding a hurley, getting your stance right, getting your swing right. These are really basic things for any child in the world to go after. So that's the second piece. And then the provision of games and making sure that, again, the kids that have equipment, the kids that are being coached, have actually games to play. And again, we have metrics within the association at the moment to establish baseline figures around nurseries or go games, but really getting into that and, again, tackling the areas that need to be tackled. So they're the three, I suppose, key pieces for me that they're three legs of a stool. And without one of those, that stool would not sail.
The equipment deficit, is that a real problem in the counties that we would consider the weaker counties at, say, senior intercounty hurling? Is it simple to say your example of Clare is just laden with equipment and the weaker counties, say if you, I don't know, go up the Western Seaboard to Roscommon, Sligo, Donegal, do they just have less equipment, less available opportunities for kids to actually play the sport?
I think it's part of it as regards, you look at a situation like Donegal, we had an initiative last year, new clubs, we had 45 new clubs that, and they're GA clubs that weren't playing hurling that are now playing hurling. So that's a real, I suppose, focus on year one to get that figure and obviously to build it out over the coming years as well. They had seven new clubs, as I said. They had a really successful league. They were narrowly defeated by Wicklow on the weekend. Huge work going on there through Mary Coughlin, the chairman or chairperson, and Cor McCartney, the hurling officer. Like, you know, but to your point, it's part of the issue as regards, it's not that there's more gear in Clare than there is in Donegal, but I suppose it's just part of the fabric and part of the culture. And where I'm from in Tipperary, the first thing you're handed is, not handed, but a hurley and a helmet, and you go play. We play equally football as well, but at the same time, that's probably not the case up the country as regards when that line from Dublin to Galway and up, making hurling more connected to communities, and gear is very much part of that, because again, for non-traditional counties in with parents that have never played the game, it's not part of their culture. So you're trying to find ways to target equipment again, but without the coaching and without the games, we are, you know, we it'll be very difficult to establish anything.
Trying to embed hurling into communities where it hasn't previously been strong feels like the overarching challenge in all of this. The measurables, I'm sure, are going to be things that you can go after very clearly, and you'll be able to have exact naked data of how successful or otherwise things have been. But actually trying to, you know, I guess, infiltrate communities, try and ensure that hurling kind of is growing from the ground up in communities in non-traditional areas, that feels like a real challenge. How do you go about doing that?
It is, but like, you know, again from a lot of travelling and a lot of visits around the country to clubs, to counties, there's a huge appetite to experience hurling. Like that's it's our national sport. Like, again, going to a match or experiencing the big days kind of gives kids or gives people the window into this game, and it's just so important as regards to give kids the opportunity. And again, the performance metrics or the metrics that we will be judging a county in the emerging counties to the strong counties are totally different. Like, this is literally, how do we get kids to experience that thrill of hitting a ball, of being on a pitch, of, I suppose, experiencing the game at its best. So I think it is difficult. And you look at it again, with, I think, with 1,610 clubs throughout the country, 796 of them provide hurling to their members. So there's nearly a 50% opportunity for us to allow kids to play the game. And this is literally nursery go games. They're the targets I'm looking at as regards and really going after in the next year, getting more hurling played. And again, bringing that number of 790 plus kids our clubs up. That's the piece. Just another piece on that would be the target for this year. We had 45 new clubs last year. We've 30 next year. 30 this year. 30 next year, 30 the year after. If we could hit those metrics, that would be a significant improvement in the amount of hurling being played through clubs in the country.
The 30 new clubs, where generally are they?
Again, the biggest opportunities probably are Connacht and Ulster and parts of Leinster. So, yeah, they're I think last year we had 18 new clubs in Ulster, with 17 in Leinster, which is a huge, I think with 7 in Wicklow. So there's a lot of work going on in pockets, just making that more strategic and understanding, I suppose, the needs of people on the ground. And just, again, trying to get hurling played more.
Are they generally built out of football clubs?
Yeah, absolutely. They're GA clubs that were playing football only. And or their amalgamations of two or three football clubs to be a hurling club. Again, a Kerry example, the work in Tralee Parnells over the last couple of years has been off the charts. Like, they won the Minor A last year in Kerry. Tralee CBS were unlucky to lose the All-Ireland Colleges B final this year. Like, there's huge, I suppose, success stories throughout the country. It's literally trying to enable others to follow on that path.
Of the 790 clubs, there's also a question, I presume, around the effectiveness of getting the message home with regards to hurling, that a lot of people can tick a box saying, yeah, we do have hurling in this club, but really how effective are the training methods? How many times a week are you training? How many age groups are actually covered by the fact that hurling is generally covered as an umbrella in this club? How much have you drilled down into that?
There is an awful lot of that as regards and just understanding that. But I suppose for emerging counties, it's literally, how do we get this off the ground? How do we start a team and help and enable volunteers to actually coach and be there? And then obviously with county officials to make sure that there's a games program there as well. Huge amount of success stories. Again, as we mentioned, they're going around the country and looking at clubs that are playing more hurling and playing more games are thriving. As regards, so it's providing more games to the membership through the volunteers. So yeah, look, it's a really difficult ask, but at the same time, hurling is, again, it's a brilliant sport, and again, making it easy and establishing solutions to those three or four barriers that I mentioned. That's the plan, or that's the trajectory, direction of travel that we are on now. And look, it's exciting, I suppose. That's the other piece in this. We spoke about it at the start, the summer's evenings and hurling being played and sport being played. Like, it's a really exciting time for clubs that embrace this. And I said we had 45 last year. Brilliant. We supported also 70 existing clubs last year with gear packs through the Hurling Development Committee, through our refresher pack. We had 70 of those clubs in Croke Park on All-Ireland final day, club final day this year. Like, the energy and the enthusiasm, and just, it was absolutely brilliant.
What are the gear packs? So you pick 70 clubs and they get sent out, what is it, 30 hurls or something like that, is it?
It was 15 hurlies, super. 15 helmets, 6 or 7 dozen hurling balls, poles, cones. But again, it was just, again, identified through the provincial games managers, through the county boards or county games managers, where to go. And I suppose it's up to us to be more strategic in that and really go after areas that we can provide more hurling in, but it has to be aligned with games and coach education as well.
Really interesting around the budget last year, people would have seen the news that 750 grand is going to go towards the growth of hurling. Where does that specifically go? Where is that cash going to flow towards?
Again, the pillars of the plan that we presented to government, coaching, which is a huge piece, and just a really important piece in the whole jigsaw. The equipment piece, as regards to a lesser extent, as regards, because we already have established programs within the association to provide gear to clubs, hurleys and helmets. But the games program as well is just really important to make sure that kids are being provided with gear, or with, sorry, games, to actually go and make sure that gear is used and games go ahead. So the club sustainability piece was a really big piece of that as well, and very much targeted, as we targeted with the packs, but also further investment for 26, 27 and 28 around providing support for volunteers in clubs to provide hurling.
It's interesting to see the government realise the potential here and the issue of not having hurling as a truly national sport. What were those conversations like? Was that a pretty easy thing to get over the line, that 750k?
Well, I don't know. Is there anything ever easy when you're talking about that amount of money? But at the same time, I think the government realised, and Minister McConnellogue and Minister O'Donovan were absolutely fantastic as regards in recognising the importance of hurling to Ireland, and it very much part of our identity. And I think that's, you know, with Minister O'Donovan, that was something that I think was really important, and he recognised that. And obviously being a Limerick man and really understanding the importance of hurling to communities, but also the caveat with that was hurling in non-traditional areas, and that's where that money is going. And that's, I suppose, the plan that we've laid out across those pillars are being supported by the government. And again, every time you see someone with a foreign dignitary country or whoever coming into the country, we hand them a hurley. So how can we, I suppose, make it more universal throughout our country?
Yeah, definitely. We'll come back to that in a sec, but the non-traditional areas is where that money is going. Can you tell us where exactly, what counties?
Again, I suppose in that emerging space as regards, and there's probably 20 counties in that, but also the developing counties as regards parts of, I suppose, non-traditional is non-traditional, and that's, yeah, and that's a lot of the country outside the top 7 or 8 counties. So that's where it's going.
Okay. You mentioned there the importance of hurling in terms of the heritage of this country, the culture of this country. Do you feel that we as a nation have actually exploited that enough?
I don't know if we've exploited it, and probably that's the wrong word, but we certainly haven't, I suppose, back to the point, kids haven't experienced it or people haven't experienced it in all parts of the country. So that has to be the message. How do we provide more experience of hurling? And I suppose plugging in hurling more culturally into different areas. And look, that could be more, again, tournaments. That could be more, I suppose, players and twinning of different counties and bringing more players to areas. A couple of coaching ideas that we're trying to work through at the moment, and getting teams of operators from more established counties to go into the emerging or developing counties, again, sustainably over time and not just once off, because there's a huge amount of that work going on. I was talking to George O'Connor, the great Wexford hurler, the other night. I think he was in Enniskerry last week. He was in Rosslare last night. You know, there's a lot of kind of informal coaching going on. How do we, I suppose, formalise all of those people that are giving their time as volunteers to go into different areas to promote the game? So I think that has to be central to it. But I think the opportunity is massive for this. We have a product, and again, I hate calling hurling that, but you know, that's the way we have to, I suppose, think about it. We have a product that we can just sell. We can really let kids and adults experience this great game. And again, it's not a threat to anyone. This is not, you know, having an under-12 hurling team is not going to mean that your senior football team is not going to win. It's literally, how do we give our kids more rounded experiences?
Has it felt like a threat in your experiences?
Possibly, yes, but I'm from Tipperary, so I suppose we play equal hurling football underage. Yeah. We always grew up, yes, we were a hurling county, but playing football as regards 12, 14, 16, I played county minor for a few years in football as well. So I understand, you know, the different pieces of no, and it certainly wasn't a threat in that regard. So
in your role, when you're going around the country, does it look like a threat
sometimes? Yes, but at the same time, I think it's about providing experience. And in fairness to Anuktro and Charlotte, his club in Silver Bridge, he brought hurling in last year as part of one of those 45 clubs.
So, really, right.
Yeah, you know, so that thought was it was great leadership from his perspective to actually go after that and make sure that, you know, his club was partaking of this opportunity. So we're trying to get more of those. And look, I don't think it was a threat, but I think genuinely, it's how do we provide experience here? How do we provide opportunity? And how do we get kids really going after the brilliance of our game? And that's something that I'm enthused with, and I'm just, you know, I'm passionate about what I'm doing, but also trying to be as strategic as we can with the opportunities and the solutions we're trying to provide.
That's the secret sauce, isn't it? When you talk about foreign dignitaries coming here and the first thing that happens is a hurley being presented to them, how do you connect that to the grassroots player, to the child who's never held a hurley? Have you any thoughts on that and how you bring those two worlds together?
I think it's everything, Owen. I think it's when there's more matches on, and again, it goes back to promotion and games on TV and this time of the year, the more hurling that's on, the more hurling that is accessible to people, the more it gets into to people and the psyche. Like, it's fine, again, on All-Ireland Final Day, you know, a lot of Irish people and huge viewing figures watching the game and being associated. But how do we, I suppose, back that off and make semi-finals the same, make quarter-finals the same? Munster Championship is in an unbelievable place, but trying to build out other competitions throughout the country to make, I suppose, hurling more mainstream. And that's what we're trying to do. You look at the success of Dublin over the last 20 years. And yes, they haven't won in All-Ireland, but like, you're walking around areas of Dublin now and kids are carrying hurleys. That would never have been the case 30, 40 years ago. So it's made a huge impact, and credit to Dublin County Board for actually pushing it to that level and facilitating, again, a games programme that allows a huge amount of hurling to be played. So, like, the success stories all over the country, I think this is a very attainable target. But again, it's just trying to, again, break it down county by county, understand participation metrics, where they're at, the amount of games that are going on, the quality of coaching that's going on, the access to equipment that is there, and trying to, I suppose, formulate plans around that. That's what we're doing at the moment. So we're well on track for providing meaningful. But again, if you don't measure it, it's not done. And I'm very big on as regards understanding what the data is and where it is and where we need to go.
You are listening to Willie Maher here in studio. He's the GAA's National Head of Hurling. And Hurling and Off the Ball is with Applegreen, coffee, convenience and a winning stop wherever you're headed. We're going to continue this conversation after these.
Hurling on Off the Ball with Applegreen, making every journey a winning one. Hurling on Off the Ball with Applegreen, making every journey a winning one.
Chrissy McCaig, like, these are, that's a hugely positive development in hurling that probably wasn't there before. Sorry, and that's a Hogan Cup winning team from the year before. So they won the All-Ireland A football in Croke Park this time last year. They won the hurling B this year. That's brilliant. You look at Tralee CBS, again, we mentioned it, winning the Munster in a county, and again, we had the demographics report going back a couple of months ago, growing a big population, growing across multiple towns. You look at, again, getting into the nuances of that, understanding NAIS, understanding the work that's gone on there over the last 20 or 30 years of going to Kilkenny to play league matches. Like, that was, again, further testament to the games piece that I mentioned earlier. They're playing high-level games. Credit to Kilkenny GAA for allowing them to come down and play. Like, things like that are absolutely brilliant. Again, you look at the Kildare situation, you look at someone like Colm Nolan, who's on the Hurling Development Committee with us, the work he did 10 or 15 years ago, chairing their hurling review. Paddy O'Neill, the brilliant Ballyboden Tipperary man, going down, I suppose, coaching and facilitating coach education there. Like, so there is success stories. Success leaves clues. And that's the, I suppose, the piece that I'm trying to catch on to and see, can we drive that on more? Again, going back to the Kildare piece, and you look at the work that Brian Dowling has done, David Herity before him for 5 years. Like, it's all these, I suppose, pieces in the jigsaw really make a difference. And I'm kind of, as I said to you, I'm enthused with what's going on. It's just trying to, I suppose, bring it together more strategically, put a system in place as opposed to individuals. And the amount of quality individuals, men and women, that have developed hurling in non-traditional areas is just absolutely brilliant. But how can we help those volunteers?
Can I ask, because this is obviously another huge opportunity for growth, when it comes to girls, are you, when you talk to about equipment and trying to get people up to speed, you're talking about girls as well as boys, and then they separate into Camogie Association at a certain age, or?
Yeah, well, I'm the father of three girls, yeah. So it's very close to my heart, and I was the chairperson of our local Camogie Club last year as well, so it's something that it's priority boys. We work in collaboration with girls until integration, and that's with the Camogie Association. So I suppose I'm working for the GAA, and it's boys, I suppose, until integration. So
okay.
That's but I think it's a very fair point as regards across those three pieces, that, you know, there's girls in primary schools with the boys, and it's important that we I suppose try to develop in unison as we can. And but these are primarily for GAA clubs, so that's the difference.
Yeah, because I'm sure, like, you're as aware as anybody that when it comes to the fastest growing sports over the last decade or so, the female specific sports or the female sides of sports have been the ones that have experienced the massive boom. And it's just kind of occurred to me that this conversation is about growth and getting more hurlies into young people's hands. Chances are integration may not happen for a long period of time, but when that does happen, that actually you're going to see the greatest growth on the female side of the sport.
Yeah, well, even again, we spoke about St. Pat's Mahara there. Like, they've been competing seriously. It's a mixed school, obviously, in Mahara. They've been seriously competing at All-Ireland level A in junior and senior camogie for the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So, like, again, it's probably all the same children from the same families as regards boys and girls. And as I said, being successful in football, hurling, camogie. Like, there's learnings, I suppose, in all of that. But it's so important as regards to your point, as regards to grow the numbers and also provide for the girls in the schools.
Yeah, like, it's obviously only informal at this point prior to official integration, but is there dialogue with the Camogie Association in terms of growing what is the same game.
Absolutely. No, and there's always, and I suppose, regular conversations with Brian, the Camogie president, and Karen, the newly appointed CEO. So yeah, there has been conversations around, I suppose, working together and trying to provide the maximum impact around the country for all children as regards boys and girls. Again, another anecdotal example, my daughters as regards in primary school in Bennisbridge, they their coaching sessions are boys and girls in primary school. So look, that's really positive. That's, again, that's a local volunteer giving his time or multiple volunteers on a Friday afternoon to actually coach the boys and the girls to play together. So it's informally happening all around the country.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's just trying to, as you said, tie it together and be strategic in what we're doing across both genders.
And look, I'm sure you'll agree with this next point, but again, just throughout this conversation, certain things kind of occur to me, and like, seeing that 750k and the way you've described where that's going to go, it sounds absolutely fantastic. But by dint of the breakdown of this country's structures, sporting-wise, that's going to be favouring boys playing the sport.
Yeah,
the girls are not going to get a sliver of the pie of that 750k. And you're talking about these fantastic ideas. It's not your fault.
Yeah,
but the sooner the women are brought in under this umbrella, under the GAA idea that this is where this money is going to go, surely that's the better in terms of growth.
I think so, yeah. And I suppose that's all on the discussion table now with integration throughout the country with all associations. And again, I suppose there's a lot of one club models out there now at the moment as well.
Yes,
so that negates that a little bit. It doesn't solve the issue, but at the same time, it's happening informally through the one club model. I think there's a lot of a synergy across, again, both games. And as I gave the example of my own kids playing with the boys, so I think it's happening. But to your point, there's a big opportunity there to actually, you know, to really drive growth through both genders.
So people will have seen the news this week as well that John Myler is going to head up a new hurling expert advisory group. So Charlotte Burns is going to be chairing it, and it's going to be, or Myler's going to chair it, and it's been kind of set up by Charlotte Burns, or certainly given the green light by him. So what we've been reading is that there are going to be recommendations based on data provided by the Games Intelligence Unit, which were providing the data for the new football rules last year as well. So they're going to be analysing presumably countless hurling matches. He's going to be joined on the group by Richie Hogan, Jeff Linsky, who obviously won multiple underage titles as a manager with Galway. And then you've got John Keenan, who is an All-Ireland referee. And then Hurling Development Committee Chairman Terry Riley, who you've mentioned here as well. So I guess the big question is, what are they going to be in charge of, or what's their MO?
Yeah, well, I'm actually on that committee as well.
Right.
And also Rory Hanafy from Offaly.
Okay.
And Ursula Jacob from Wexford. So it's a pretty high profile, very capable group of people just looking at the game. And I suppose drawing baselines of where it's at. Like, I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of contacts. Oh, the game is gone. The game is lost. There's too much foul hand passing, and there's this and there's that. Puckouts are too short, and all the different issues. So I think this group is formulated with, look, what's happening with the game? Can you give us defined metrics on how many puckouts go long, how many puckouts go short, how many go, how many contests there are throughout the game, how many hand passes are legal, how many are not, how many? So I think it's just trying to draw a baseline of where the game is at. And look, again, no better man than John Myler, hugely experienced, hugely capable of driving this. And again, credit to Charlotte for instigating this. This committee, I think it's a really important piece in the growth of the actual game and understanding where we're at. And then when we find out through the Games Intelligence Unit what's actually happening, we can actually recommend changes that might make a difference to the game. Again, with data as we go. So I think it's a hugely positive piece, and I'm delighted to be on board. And it's just something that I think we just, to understand the game more. Yeah. That's the I suppose the MO of this.
Where do you think the game should go?
I think the game is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely, and that's not, I think the game is in an unbelievable place. I think we just need to probably tidy up a few pieces like that. Again, by supporting referees to actually make the more correct decisions, which, you know, it's very, very, very difficult to do. Again, something I hadn't mentioned earlier, like I'm talking with the referees an awful lot, with Donald Smith in Croke Park, and understanding their needs and going to training sessions and seeing the work that they're doing by them as a group of officials is just it's brilliant. So how can we support them more? But I think the game, like, again, as a Tipperary man, I think I'd say it, it's brilliant after last year. But at the same, like, we had some fantastic games. Like, I love going to matches. I love I'm going out to, I think Dublin are playing Wexford tonight under 19 in Belfield in a development league. I'm going to go to that. Like, it's just, there's a huge amount of great games, and the game is good. The game is really good. Like, scoring has never been as high. The quality of the play has been, the skill levels are just off the charts. The level of athlete is just fantastic. So I think, again, it's small tweaks. This is not a take it apart and put it back together again. This is literally, how do we, again, recommend changes to make the game even better.
This is not going to be a football review committee situation like last year. Interesting that the refereeing constantly comes up, isn't it? It just does seem like the most difficult sport in the world to referee. Would you consider two referees per match?
I don't know, being honest about it. But at the same time, I think anything that can make the game better, it's extremely difficult to referee. Like, you've been at big matches, I've been at big matches. Like, how, you know, a person in the middle can officiate and see everything. It's really, really difficult. So look, I don't know if two referees will ever be on the agenda, but I think just to make it easier for one man, one individual, to actually make better decisions, and we need to give them all the support and education that we can. There's a huge amount of work going on in that space, and I think that's encouraging. I think the dissent piece fits nicely into that as regards to allow referees even make clearer decisions. But I think it's important that we're always looking, and that's the piece, and that's, I suppose, with the Games Intelligence Unit, with the new Hurling Review Committee. There's a lot of really exciting things going on in the association at the moment for hurling. And I'm delighted to be spearheading some of that.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of that research, and very best of luck with it. You have been listening to Willie Maher, the GAA's National Head of Hurling. Willie, thanks a million for popping in.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, we'll take a quick break.
Hurling on Off the Ball with Apple Green, making every journey a winning one.